increasing clouds tomorrow. Right now, 79 in Boston.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's Friday night, and we are joined by Mr. Walk on the Wild Side, one-time glam rocker, proto-punk visionary, and now Edgar Allan Poe channeler, Lou Reed.
These are the stories of Edgar Allan Poe. Not exactly the point head story. Tell your tales of heart and he'll play with your mind. If you haven't heard of him, you must be dead or blind. These are the stories of Edgar Allan Poe. Not exactly the point head story. He'll tell you about Usher's eyes burning his mind, his love for his dear sister, his dad would drive him wild. The murder of a stranger, the murder of a friend, the calling from the pits of hell that never seemed to end. These are the stories of Edgar Allan Poe, not exactly the boy next door. These are the stories of Edgar Allan Poe, not exactly the boy next door.
Once you think of it, it takes about half a second to feel the link between the legendary Lou Reed and the dark American master poet Edgar Allan Poe. Think passion, think noir, think taboo, and you've got the terrain of Lou Reed and gothic genius Poe in Reed's new album, The Raven. Lou Reed made a giant mark for himself in the rock world, first as the leader of the Velvet Underground, then as solo performer without bounds, rolling grandly, darkly, gaily, into themes of drug use, kinky sex, transvestites, and suicidal depression. Songs like Heroin, Walk on the Wild Side, and Sally Can't Dance. Match that with Edgar Allan Poe's literary journeys into obsession, paranoia, and willful acts of self-destruction, and you've got a thoroughly modern artistic marriage. On Reed's new CD, The Raven, Poe's gothic charms and horrors are recited, sung, and interpreted by Reed and a slew of guests, including Willem Dafoe, David Bowie, jazz saxman Ornette Coleman, even Reed's personal companion and performance artist Laurie Anderson. Tonight on Point, the music of Wildside rock and roll legend Lou Reed and the canon of the literary genius Edgar Allan Poe. Welcome to On Point, Lou Reed.
That's purple prose.
Yes, it is
purple. Who wrote that?
Well, that's a committee effort.
My God. Yeah.
Lou, there's a lot people are going to want to know about the origins of this project and this CD, but just for starters, your attraction to the work of Edgar Allan Poe, you say in the liner notes, I surge toward it like a Rottweiler chasing a bloody bone. It makes a kind of innate sense to us, but what is it, Lou Reed, that made you the Rottweiler after Poe?
The director, Bob Wilson, had asked me to write something, a play about Edgar Allan Poe. He said, this is for you, you'll just love doing this. And I did. And it was performed in Germany under the name Poetry. And we had the opportunity to record it. And because it was a play, it was something you saw, and a CD is something you hear. So rewrote the whole thing again. This is over a period of 4 years. And working with Hal Wilner, we got all these great New York actors and New York musicians together and everything.
And was this first put together as a kind of score for a stage play or a poetry reading? How would you describe it?
Originally, it was a play. And then it was reworked entirely to be something you could listen to. So when something visual took place, you would hear it. Mm-hmm. So you could see it with your imagination. And more songs were added to it, and it mutated and morphed over time. One of the things that had started this is my co-producer Hal Wilner periodically has a Halloween show every year in New York at St. Anne's, and it's a celebration of Edgar Allan Poe, and he invites a lot of musicians and actors down. And I went down there and I did the Telltale Heart, and it's when I did it out loud for an audience that I really tagged into Poe and realized that I'd really not understood him before.
Time to get back together with this guy. So this Edgar Allan Poe wasn't at your bedside over all these decades of life.
No.
It wasn't your nighttime reading or...
I missed it. I had a superficial understanding of him, but then I tagged in and started reading everything with a dictionary by my side because he's very... I hope people understand Edgar Allan Poe is not just a Roger Corman movie. Edgar Allan Poe is generally recognized as one of the greatest of America's writers. You have, let's see, Hawthorne, Melville, Poe.
The real towers,
Whitman.
The real geniuses.
When you're talking about the top, you have to have Poe in there.
And yet you write that he is more peculiarly attuned to our new century's heartbeat than he ever was to his own. What do you mean by that, Lou Reed?
What's your last name?
Ashbrook.
Well, Tom Ashbrook. What I mean...
Oh, boy.
What I mean is that the world the way it is today, I mean, now there's SARS, for God's sakes. It's not bad enough, AIDS and terrorism and job security and anthrax and now SARS. There's ample reason to constantly be kind of looking over your shoulder and thinking, whoa, what could be happening?
What's that dark shadow?
And that's Poland. What is that big dark bird coming sitting in my room?
Yeah.
That's my take on it. This is a station that reaches a lot of colleges, so if you're out there and you have a differing opinion, I'd like to hear about it. My take on this is the way I did it on the record, the CD. We have a vinyl version made in Germany that's, you know, I would give anything if the people who made, I'm not in charge of these things, the people who made CDs, fine. A CD's that big. It's like a 45.
Sure.
But package it the way you would have packaged an album.
So it's got some
presence. A real package.
Yeah.
The real album. So, okay, so the CD's not as big as a record. Doesn't matter. Keep the package.
Blow
that
up
big.
The package.
Get rid of that wretched plastic.
Yes.
That thing that busts in your hand. By the time you open it, it cracks and you feel like shooting it.
Edgar Allan Poe might have sliced his wrists with it. We're going to intersperse our conversation with tracks from Lou Reed's new CD, The Raven. Here's a dramatic reading of The Fall of the House of Usher. Lou Reed, you have Fisher Stevens and Willem Dafoe reading here.
And Usher's sister is played by the magnificent, magnificent Elizabeth Ashley, who's appearing on Broadway as we speak.
Pulled together by Lou Reed. Let's hear it.
And then I had a vision.
Ah, Edgar. Ah, Edgar, my dear friend Edgar.
It's been a long time, Roderick. I've ridden many miles. It's been a dull and soundless day for autumn. The leaves have lost their autumn glow, and the clouds seem oppressive with their drifting finery.
I know, my friend. Though I own so much of this land, I find the country insufferable. I deal only in half-pleasures.
Speaking of half-pleasure, would you care for a tincture of opium?
Nothing would please me more than to smoke with an old friend. I've experienced the hideous dropping of the veil, the bitter lapse into common life, unredeemed dreariness of thought. I have an iciness, a sickening of the heart.
It's true, you don't look well, Roderick, but I am your friend, no matter the occasion or position of the stars. I'm glad you wrote me, but I must admit to concern.
I cannot contain my heart. Edgar, I look to you for solace, for relief from myself. What I have is constitution, a family evil, a nervous affection that must surely pass, but I do have this morbid acuteness of senses. I can eat only the most insipid food, clothes only of the lightest texture. The odor of flowers I find oppressive. My eyes cannot bear even the faintest light. Did you hear that?
I hear. I am listening. Go on.
I shall perish. I will perish in this deplorable folly. I dread the future, not the events, the results. The most trivial event causes the greatest agitation of the soul. I do not fear danger except in its absolute effect, terror. I find I must inevitably abandon life and reason together in my struggles with the demon fear. Perhaps you'll think me superstitious, but the physique of this place, it hovers about me like a great body, some diseased outer shell, some decaying finite skin encasing my morale.
You'd mentioned your sister was ill.
My beloved sister, my sole companion, has had a long continuing illness whose inevitable conclusion seems forsworn. This will leave me the last of the ancient race of ushers.
She looks so much like you.
I love her in a nameless way more than I love myself. Her demise will leave me hopelessly confined to memories and realities of a future so barren as to be stultifying.
Dramatic reading from The Fall of the House of Usher, Edgar Allan Poe.
You don't sound as good as Willem.
No, not near.
By the way, do you
never know, have, never will.
Yeah. We were talking to some people. He said, Willem's voice is like an ice cream cone. It's like just a huge bar of chocolate ice cream. You don't even have to know what he's saying. You just... That voice,
So
hypnotic and mesmeric, you like it so much.
It's somehow akin to yours, Lou. I can't put my finger on how to describe that kinship.
Well, that's a nice thing to hear. I don't know what Willem would think, but he's in a thing called the Wooster Group. And I met Willem through the Wooster Group, which is a theater ensemble in New York. And that's how we got to Steve Buscemi, because he had worked with Willem. Mm-hmm. And Katie Volk is also from the Wooster Group.
Now, when you pulled these lyrics up from Poe and into Lou Reed land, you actually came in and put some of your edits in here, some of your contemporizing changes to Poe. Did we hear some right here in The Fall of the House of Usher?
Yeah, I'm trying to make him more understandable. I thought I understood him.
The kindred spirit.
I, more than any other human being.
Alive today.
I know Poe better than you do, and now you listen to me. His language is very difficult, can be very difficult. Mm-hmm. I, like I said, sat with a dictionary looking up all these different words and sort of references, etc., and then tried to put it into a way that would be understandable to you and keep things moving forward without having to stop and say, what does that mean?
You know that unbelievable feeling in life when you find someone who's searching along the same vein that you are for whatever it is you're searching for, when you can feel their kind of comradeship in their search. And I'm assuming that's what you have felt with Poe.
Well, I think that's what great art is. I feel that way when I look at a painting by Vincent van Gogh. I feel that way when I'm reading William Burroughs. Great artists make you feel that way. That's what defines their universality.
Universality, but not every artist, certainly pop artists these days.
What do we mean by really pop?
Well, I'm not sure, but
I don't
popular.
I don't think I fall into pop.
And I'm not putting you there. What I'm saying is, in that realm, that kind of genuine search is so often missing that when you see it, when you hear it, it comes across as something rare, and it can also have different colorings. I mean, yours...
In any media, for that matter. When you see it in a movie, it's sometimes... certain things surge in popularity, and I think it's because it strikes some kind of chord with everybody else, where for that one instant everything is tied together along the same freeway.
We want to hear some more from Lou Reed's new album, The Raven. Lou, here's Call on Me. I think you're performing here with Laurie Anderson. Tell us about this cut.
It's so incredibly beautiful. It came off this great bass part you're hearing Fernando play there. And also there's a lovely poem we worked into the lyric. The lyric is mine. The poem's an excerpt from A Wild Being from Birth by Poe that Laurie recites.
Let's listen to Call on Me from The Raven.
Violent upheaval, the pure driven instinct, the pure driven murder, the attraction of daring, stand high. Why didn't you call on me? Why didn't you call on me? Why didn't you call on me? Why didn't you?
We'll be back with more of Lou Reed after a short break. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
A wild being from birth, my spirit's burns control, wandering the wide earth, searching for my soul, dimly peering at what shone afar. What could there be more purely bright than truth's day star?
Why didn't you call on me? Why didn't you call on me? Why didn't you call on me? Why didn't you call?
Why didn't you call on me? Why didn't you call on me? Why didn't you call on me?
roderick.org.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with rock and roll dark star and new communer with Edgar Allan Poe, Lou Reed. From his latest CD, The Raven, this is I Wanna Know, The Pit and the Pendulum, Lou Reed singing the words of Poe with special guests, the Blind Boys of Alabama.
Oh, yeah. Under the intense scrutiny of Lucia's eyes, I have felt the full knowledge and force of their expression.
Whoa, whoa, yeah.
From the new album from Lou Reed, The Raven, the cut is I Want to Know, The Pit and the Pendulum, Lou Reed with the Blind Boys of Alabama. Lou, how did you decide who to bring into this amazing crew that you put together for the CD? You've got such a slew of people here. What took you to the Blind Boys of Alabama, for example?
Me and Wilner were sitting around thinking of all the other things being equal. We have anybody you want. If you could have anybody.
Yeah.
Anyone.
Dream list.
And I said, well, gotta have the Mighty Clouds of Joy, or the Five Blind Boys, or the Staple Singers.
But what about the Pit and the Pendulum in this case made you think that vein, Blind Boys vein?
Oh, because in the Pit and the Pendulum, he's before a judge.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He's before a judge, and he's being judged. And I figured,
laying it down,
you're being judged like God is going to judge you. Now, this is gospel time. We're going to have a court. We have a court, and we have a judge and a jury. And that led in a straight line, let's say, judge, a jury, straight line down the gospel.
We're moving south.
straight line down the gospel highway. And then,
right.
Well, who would you love to have? And then guess who showed up in New York to play at Battery Park one day? The Five Blind Boys.
Yeah.
And Wilner, who knows everybody, got in touch.
And there it is.
And they were there the next day.
Lou Reed, who is a worthy judge of Lou Reed?
I don't know. Not me.
I mean, you've walked a wide delta. You've taken yourself and your listeners into all kinds of
film noir
hidey holes and noir continents. And
well,
I just
sure.
Wonder,
I mean, that's the fun of this form. All these other places, no one had taken it. It was a field day. It's like a field day.
But you clearly weren't prepared to put yourself up to the judgment of just pop primacy. It was something else. Way something else. So,
oh, Delmore Schwartz,
yeah,
and Andy,
yeah,
that's who I.
I know. That's
where
Delmore Schwartz you're talking about. But which Andy are you talking?
Warhol.
About? Oh, of course.
I mean, that's where my bar is set from day one.
When did you first meet Andy Warhol?
65.
What was the setting, and when did you know that you would set your bar by his mark?
Well, some bars by his mark,
yeah,
but we were playing a dive in the Village, and we were working with these underground filmmakers. We would sit behind the screen, I mean the Velvet Underground, me and John. People couldn't afford sound then, so we would sit behind the screen and we would do long instrumental things watching the movie at the time from the rear, mm-hmm. from the back of the screen, mm-hmm. sitting in back. Mm-hmm. And we were doing things like that, and that we were getting involved with a lot of what were called underground filmmakers who met at a place called the Cinematheque in New York, which is a place they also have in Paris. And we then got a job in this real dive in the Village. They paid us a hamburger and a beer.
And that did it.
Well, you know, we didn't have anything, so even getting paid food was more than what we had.
And as you got to know Andy Warhol,
and
what was
somebody,
it that...
Well, you know,
what was
somebody
the deal
brought
there?
Him down. Mm-hmm. One of his people came down, saw us, and thought Andy should see this. So they brought Andy down, and we got fired that night. And Andy said, why don't you come with me?
Was this Velvet Underground at that point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we were the Velvet Underground then. We were certainly as unknown can be. Mm-hmm. We're like minus unknown.
And there's the invitation to Andy Warhol's famous factory.
Now, anyway.
Right. So, if, you know, we went, and then he had a week at the Cinematheque to do anything he wanted. This is kind of where some light shows and performance art started springing up. So he said, why don't you come there? And he adopted us. We just became part of the factory. And then he did this show, and we did music, and he showed films on us.
On your bodies?
Yeah.
And all these years later, you cite Andy Warhol as the benchmark, as the notch in the tree that you might even judge yourself by.
What? Well, because he was always, I really admired him. I mean, I still do.
I'm trying to get at what the essence of that was.
That he's so smart. So smart, so talented, absolutely good at everything. Incredible. And anything you looked at, it would be interesting to see what Andy saw. And just so smart. It's very thrilling to be around people that smart, mm-hmm. that creative, that mm-hmm. smart. And he would always say to me, he said, you know, how many songs did you write? Because he worked 24 hours a day, every single day of the week.
All the time.
Never stopped. And he would say to me, how many songs? I mean, I wrote about this on an album called Songs for Jolly. He said, how many songs did you write? I'd say, 5. He said, why didn't you write 10? You know, what's wrong with you? Why are you so lazy? You're just so lazy. I don't understand it.
Don't waste your time. Let it flow.
And then he would come in the next day and say, and how many did you write today?
That's merciless.
It would be different if it was coming from someone who wasn't themselves doing
it. But he was doing it, so take the example.
He was
doing
15 paintings a day or whatever. You know, so I said,
maybe you should have done silkscreen, Lou. Might have been easier.
No, because I know how good I am, and I know how fast I am.
Yeah. And there he was.
there was Andy. I said, uh-oh, this is what we've waited for all our life. Here it is. This is the real thing.
Let's get Edgar Allan Poe back into the room here with a cut from Lou Reed's new album, The Raven. Here's a kind of dramatic reading, a kind of performance radio piece, The Telltale Heart, Part 1.
True. Nervous, very nervous.
Madman. Why will you say that I am mad? The disease has sharpened my senses, not destroyed, not dulled them.
Madman.
The eye of a vulture, a pale blue eye with a film over it.
Listen. Observe how healthily and how calmly I tell this story.
He had no passion for the old man. He was never insulted.
He loved him.
It was the eye, the eye, the eye.
I made up my mind to take his life forever.
Passion.
The eye of a vulture.
You should have seen me.
How wisely I proceeded.
To rid himself of the eye forever.
With what dissimulation I went to work.
Caution!
I turned the latch on his door and opened it.
To practice.
I opened his door and put in a dark lantern.
Dark!
Slowly. I put my head in. Slowly, I thrust it until, in time, I entered. I was in so far. And then I undid the lantern so a thin ray fell upon the eye.
The vulture eye.
He did this for 7 days.
7 days.
But always the eye was closed, and so I could not do the work.
And in the day, he would greet the old man calmly in his chamber.
Calmly.
Nothing is wrong, and all is well.
Knock, knock. Who's there?
Came night 8.
Night 8.
I was slower than a watchman at hand. The power that I had with the old man not to even dream my secret thoughts.
Secret thoughts.
My sagacity. I could barely conceal my feelings of triumph.
When suddenly the body moved.
The body moved.
But I went in even further, pushing the door open even further.
Who's there?
Who's there? I did not move a muscle. I kept quiet and still.
The old man sat up in bed.
In his bed.
Who's there?
I heard a groan and knew it was a groan of mortal terror, not pain or grief.
Oh, no! The low, stifled sound that arises from the bottom of the soul when overcharged with awe. I felt such awe welling up in my own bosom, deepening with its echo the terrors that distracted me, knowing what the old man felt and
pitying him.
Although it made me laugh. Ha ha!
He'd been lying awake since the first slight noise. He'd been lying awake thinking.
The wind.
It is nothing but the house.
The old man stalked with his black shadow.
Death approaching. The mournful presence of the unperceived, causing him to feel my presence.
Open the lantern!
I saw the ray fall on the eye. On the eye!
The Telltale Heart, Part 1, from Lou Reed's new album pulling together a whole slew of great talent, The Raven, off the work of Edgar Allan Poe. Lou Reed, you write about the passion for exactly the wrong thing, the struggle with what wrong is. Poe clearly did a lot of that. Is that what pulled you to him as well?
There's not a word in here that's about Poe's life. It's all Poe's stories.
Poe's stories.
It's all built on the characters in Poe's stories. And as a dramatic convenience, I'm essentially just putting all the male Poe characters together and making it young Poe, old Poe. And the female characters are all basically, to me, the same. It's always a form of very serious, unrequited love. But the key to all of these things is an essay Poe wrote called The Imp of the Perverse. Mm-hmm. What a title.
Oh, what a
you
title.
Could just, you could just stop there.
Yes.
One of the things I loved about Delmo Schwartz was...
This is
his
great writer
great
and
titles.
One of your teachers at Syracuse.
Yeah. Well, his amazing titles, The Heavy Bear That Walks With You, that one's good. And certainly Poe, The Imp of the Perverse. And what does he mean by that? Well, students, this is what he means. He means, and it resonates today, why are we drawn to that which we know is bad for us? That's simply put. It's mm-hmm. like the reverse of the Kantian ethic. The Kantian ethic being mm-hmm. do unto others, you know. And here we have the reverse. Why are we drawn to that which we know is bad for us? Well, anybody in a 12-step program would like the answer to that.
Yes, they would.
And people who smoke. Or in Poe's case, we have people who are getting away literally with murder. Mm-hmm. And they suddenly
say, hey.
And they go and they say something to someone, which puts them in a lot of hot water. And the thing is, why? Why, at the end of The Telltale Heart, does he suddenly say to the cop, it's under your chair? Why does he do that? He's home free.
But the imp of the perverse leaps out there.
Well, when I read The Telltale Heart out loud, that's when I first understood, because I was acting it out. So I became it, not just reading it. And then I understood why he says that to the cop. And that was, to me, incredibly fascinating. He says it to the cop because he thinks the cop's making fun of him by not admitting that he hears this heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
So he says to him, on the record, he says, do you mock me? Are you mocking me? What does he mean by that? Because he hears this incredible heartbeat, probably his own from adrenaline.
This is Lou Reed's version of Edgar Allan Poe.
The cop is sitting in a chair over where the body's buried.
Yeah.
And there's
boom, boom.
He says, don't you hear that? And the cop says, what? Don't you hear that? What? Who do you think you're kidding? What do you mean you don't hear that? Who do you think you're kidding? Are you mocking me? Okay, look, right under there. There it is. Why? Because he thinks the guy's making fun of him. Interesting. I found that fascinating.
Lou Reed, in your career, have you opened yourself to the imp of the perverse as an artist? As a man, as a person, I guess we have no choice. But as an artist, has that been actually a wellspring for you?
When I got started, there were areas available for, quote, songwriting, and I use that really as loose as you could, that for whatever reason were so commonplace in novels. I've been saying this forever, but not in songwriting. If you did it in songwriting, it was considered a big deal.
You mean in songwriting was narrowly confined, the kind of channel that you could row in? Yeah.
Well, you had blues records that might touch on it, or maybe Kurt Vile or Brecht. Okay. But what I mean is, you write a song called Heroin, and you would think the roof fell in.
Yeah.
Why, when you have movies like The Man with the Golden Arm?
Mm-hmm.
Why, when you have books by Burroughs?
You must have given that a lot of thought. What's the answer to that why?
The answer, I thought, was hilarious. I mean, this was like shooting fish in a barrel. Because there was a very childish thing going on over here, and no one had upped the bar to include adults.
It was just childishness. It wasn't restriction. It wasn't censorship. It wasn't fear of, I don't know, public morality coming down on the artist as a musician, where it didn't come down on a novelist or a filmmaker.
Well, I mean, obviously the musician's as much of an artist as the filmmaker.
Of course, but the medium is often radio, which is maybe more indiscriminate than the cinema or what's between the covers of a book.
I thought of it as dealing with squirrels. That's why I've never cared about what anybody said about anything or what they played or don't play or what they think or don't think. To me, it's like talking squirrels. It's like, how could you write about it? It's like, I can't even imagine. I mean, it took a while to have Joyce's Ulysses brought in here. And there's people like that who tried to stop this. So, I mean, by no means am I putting myself up with James Joyce, but I'm just saying those people and whatever they think about anything, choose to play, don't choose to play, accuse me of, don't accuse me of, I could care less because it's like talking to a squirrel. Couldn't possibly think less of it. But also think about it. So here's this entire area nobody's writing about.
Wide open.
Wide open. Zero. Complete continent. You say, it's not possible.
It's mine. All mine.
Anywhere you want to go, any way I want to imagine it, any way I want to turn it, anything is zero. And, you know, it's still pretty much zero because you got hip-hop and they're talking about one-nth of it.
Yeah.
Way over there.
Bling,
and bling. They leave and they're still all the way over here. It's kind of amazing to me because some of the better minds that would write novels or make movies haven't gone into this. Mm-hmm. Because it requires things that seem contradictory. Usually musicians are not necessarily the most articulate people. They talk through their music. So people who are lyrically gifted and need to work with musicians, and then you're in this sphere a lot of times where you're dealing with talking squirrels. So they go into another area where that restriction isn't necessarily there. No one's going to give a shit in a movie if you say fuck. But on radio, they will. Mass media. TV, they will.
There it is.
So do you care if you're bleeped? I like being bleeped. People said, do you care if you're bleeped? I don't mind being bleeped. What I mind is being having it edited out so no one knows that you were bleeped. You know, so if you take something out, I said, it should be bleeped, not cleaned up. You'd like to hold my thighs. If it's wrong to think on this, to hold the dead past in your fist, why were we given memories? Let us lose our minds and be set free. Sometimes I wonder.
We'll continue our conversation with Lou Reed after a short break. Let's go into it listening to more of Who Am I, Trip Tina's song from his latest CD, The Raven. I'm Tom Ashbrook. More in a minute. This is On Point.
A younger man now getting old. I have to wonder. To someone who later betrayed, and godless love sent us away.
WBUR.org.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're joined this hour by rock legend Lou Reed, whose new CD, The Raven, brings Reed's dark tones to the famously dark world of Edgar Allan Poe. From that CD, this is Vanishing Act.
It must be nice to disappear, to have a vanishing act, to always be looking forward, and never looking back. How nice it is to disappear, float into a mist with the young lady on your arm, looking for a kiss.
Lou Reed, you still know how to do beautiful, even in the context of Poe, and why not? There's plenty of beauty in Poe. What's that mist you're headed into with the young lady on your arm?
Well, wouldn't we all like to know? You know, you can't see in a mist, can you?
No.
That's probably that which we're not allowed to see from over here.
Poe writes a lot about death.
You know, in the play, as he starts to go off into the mist, a tree falls on him.
Boom.
My idea.
Lou Reed swings the big bat, the tree.
I created him. I can take him out, too.
Poe thought about death a lot, wrote about death a lot. Do you?
I think if you add my songs up, it's probably not the dominant theme. The dominant theme in my songs, because I'm approaching them as a novelist, is conflict. Conflict over whatever. But it's always, every song is geared to cause an emotion in the listener through the conflict going on within the song.
We want to get a little bit of Amanda Plummer in here with Tripitina's speech.
Amanda, my beautiful Amanda Plummer, who I love so much.
Of
Agnes of God fame. And I wanted her to do this little speech for me. And I wrote this specifically for her. And she went with Wilner. And they gave me 35 versions of it to choose from.
That's generosity, eh?
People who are really good are really serious. And as far as I'm concerned, the truth of anything is in the details. That's where you really find out what it's all about. And she gave me the greatest details to work with.
We're only going to get to hear a minute of this. What should we listen for, Lou Reed?
I would listen for the singing in her voice. She practices singing the words beforehand. And so when she comes in, it's amazing. She comes in breathlessly. And she'd worked her way up to that. It's really incredible.
Let's listen.
My love, the king by any other name, a Bessoir. You, my love, tower over them all. They are but vermin beneath your heels. They are monkeys. Soothe them, frame them to your own vision, but do not let one false word of mockery seep through to your vast heart. I have seen you from close and afar, and your worth far exceeds your height, your width, the depth of your sorrow. Oh, willful outcast, dost thou not see the light of our love? Our linked fortunes, our hearts melted together into one fine golden braided finery. They listen to the music of idiots and amuse themselves with the sordid miseries of their businesses. They are not the things of angels, nor of any higher outpost that humanity might aspire to. Your loathsome, vomitous businessman king is of the lowest order. His advisors, crumbling mockeries of education driven by avarice.
Lou Reed, Edgar Allan Poe, and Amanda Plummer, maybe commenting on Enron there for a second, Lou.
Maybe not just Enron. Talking about the music business, talking about business. I wrote that one, not Poe. But I was using that tone. It was fun to write in that tone.
To let Edgar build the ramp and then just take your big swan dive.
He gave me a beautiful template. It's hard to miss. But it's fun to write in a language that isn't quite contemporary.
Yeah, there's that special extra twist to it. And yet again, you write, you say, he is perhaps more suited for this century than his own. You really feel that?
I think that the anxiety-provoking issues of the day, from AIDS to SARS to terrorism to will you have a job tomorrow, make Poe somebody worth relating to these days in particular.
Lou Reed, it's been an absolute pleasure having you. I want to thank you so much for coming in. It's just terrific. Wonderful album. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Let's close this hour with Guardian Angel from Lou Reed's new album, The Raven. You'll hear the tenor Anthony at the end of this song. Listeners, if you're in the Boston area this weekend, Lou Reed will be performing tomorrow night at the Orpheum Theater in Boston. To find out more about that show, when Lou Reed's tour is coming to your town, or more about his latest CDs, The Raven and NYC Man, The Collection, visit our website at onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
I have a guardian angel. Keep him in my head. When I I'm afraid and alone, I call him to my bed. I have a guardian angel who keeps bad things from me. The only way to ruin it would be for me not to trust me. The only way to ruin it would be for me not to trust me.
In a moment, I'll be joined by On Point News analyst Jack Beatty. First, let's listen back to the sounds of this past week.
An alert Murphy police officer noticed something unusual going on behind the Valley Village Shopping Center here in Murphy, and ultimately arrested Eric Robert Rudolph at about 4:30 a.m. this morning.
Les relations franco-américaines sont bicentenaires.
Franco-American relations go back 200 years and will continue in a spirit of cooperation.
This, in my judgment, will be seen as a decision that is both dumb and dangerous. And I regret very much that the public interest was not served today by the FCC.
This vision means that alongside the existing state of Israel, a new state for the Palestinians will emerge.
All here today now share a goal. The Holy Land must be shared between a state of Palestine and a state of Israel.
It is in Israel's interest not to govern the Palestinians, but for the Palestinians to govern themselves in their own state.
We repeat our denunciation and renunciation of terrorism against the Israelis. Such methods are a dangerous obstacle to the achievement of an independent, sovereign state.
Martha Stewart is being prosecuted not because of who she is, but because of what she did.
And this latest one, that weapons of mass destruction were a complete invention by the British government. The truth is, some people resent the fact it was right to go to conflict. We won the conflict, and Iraq is now free, and we should be proud of that.
It is time for the President of the United States to demand an accounting from his own administration as to exactly how our nation was led down such a twisted path to war.
I believe that the presentation made by Secretary Powell was accurate and will be proved to be accurate.
The Times isn't Hal Raines. The Times isn't Gerald Boyd. The Times is over 1,000 of the best journalists in the world.
A lot going on this week. Special Agent Chris Sweeker announcing the arrest of alleged Atlanta Olympics bomber Eric Rudolph. Jacques Chirac praises the Franco-U.S. relationship at the G8 summit in Evian, France. Senator Byron Dorgan lambasting the FCC's decision to relax media ownership rules. Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak at Sharm el-Sheikh and President Bush, Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, and Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas in Aqaba, Jordan, all commenting on this week's historic meetings on the roadmap to peace in the Middle East. Martha Stewart is indicted on 9 counts. Britain's Prime Minister Tony Blair lashes out at accusations from his own MPs and others that intelligence used to justify war in Iraq was falsified. Senator Robert Byrd demands an inquiry into potential intelligence abuses leading up to war with Iraq. And New York Times New Jersey section editor Mitch Blumenthal there on the resignation of Times executive editor Hal Raines and managing editor Gerald Boyd. Jack Beatty, even the powerful can fall.
Yes, Sammy Sosa's bat and Hal Raines falling from the Times, and of course Martha Stewart's indictment. You know, to me, one of the most curious aspects of the week was the connection that's emerged between the Iraq weapons of mass destruction story, the administration embarrassment, the transatlantic embarrassment over that, and the New York Times.
What's the connection, Jack?
Well, it turns out that Judith Miller, who, of course, is their star reporter on chemical biological weapons, was taking her sources to quote from one of her emails that the people from the Iraqi National Congress, including Abed Chalabi, quote, provided most of the front page exclusives on WMD to our paper, end quote. That's from an internal communication that was leaked to the Washington Post.
Kind of a thin reed to rest all of those accusations on.
Well,
and a partisan
what
one.
We're finding out is that this was, in fact, one of the reasons the intelligence, according to the British people in British intelligence and our intelligence, we heard from a CIA man last night, that it was the exiles that were giving, who for their own reason, were sort of, you know, giving very inaccurate information to people in the administration. Now they're giving it to the New York Times, and it went on the front page of the New York Times.
And it was picked up, and it worked, and there was a war.
Yes.
Roadmap in the Middle East, the big guys sitting down this week, but lots of dissension within their ranks.
Lots of dissension. You know, you can almost see the shape of two civil wars coming, can't you? I mean, certainly between the Palestinian Authority and Hamas, which now says it's broken off negotiations with, it's going to continue its war, and perhaps even between the Israeli government and some of the settlers. You know, one of the things that leapt out at me this week was the Palestinian Authority gave one of our diplomats a list of the settlements that they wanted gone in order to achieve contiguity. There were 34 of them, but there were only 15,000 people in them. Is that all they want gone? I mean, of course, that's serious. But suddenly I thought, well, gee, maybe this isn't like, you know, 200,000 people who live there. So that was kind of that made me think that this is, well, at least the numbers seem much lower.
Might be doable.
Yeah.
President Bush in Iraq this week and more servicemen, American servicemen killed in Iraq this week.
9 killed in the last 10 days. Now, at what point do we start making analogies to the West Bank and to the situation of the Israelis? They haven't lost 9 servicemen in the last 10 days, that's for sure.
Well, it's a big country, and it's not going to be easy, and it hasn't been easy this week. Jack Beatty, thanks for being with us tonight and all week long. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Imada, Chris O'Connor, Virginia Prescott, John Roberts, James Ross, Keith Shields, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skoke. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. And tonight, we say goodbye and thank you to our friend and producer, Tamar Morad. We'll miss you tomorrow. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.